I'm Brett Baer, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Monday, October 15th, 2018. I'm Lisa Brady. The president's famous question to black Americans is challenged in a new book.
When he asked, "What the hell do you have to lose?" this book says, "Here, Mr. President, take a look. I'll show you what you're doing that's costing black America today."
I'm Jared Halpern. Kanye West had his say in the Oval Office, and Taylor Swift has made endorsements of her own. Is there an impact?
It's important not to kind of cast that aside and go, well, they're younger voters, they'll probably register, but that's probably about it.
I'm Diamond.
And I'm Silk.
We've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
Mm-hmm. Let's flashback to August of 2016. And then candidate Donald Trump's appeal to minority communities.
To the African Americans, who I employ so many people. To the Hispanics, tremendous people. What the hell do you have to lose? Give me a chance. I'll straighten it out.
And after nearly 2 years in office, the president touts progress for those communities, often citing low unemployment rates. And he does have some high-profile supporters.
I love this guy right here. Let me give this guy a hug right here. I love this guy right here.
Rapper Kanye West's visit to the Oval Office last week, panned by some as a meaningless spectacle, though he did raise some serious issues, including police brutality, crime in his home city, Chicago, and prison reform. And he was there with Hall of Fame running back Jim Brown.
These two are special people. Whether you like it, whether you don't like it, they're special people.
But Juan Williams, co-host of The Five, just doesn't buy it. He's written a new book, What the Hell Do You Have to Lose? Trump's War on Civil Rights.
This is a critical point in American history. So when you stop and think about the Trump administration, the election of Donald Trump, clearly most people didn't think he was going to be the president of the United States. I don't think I know anybody who predicted it. But when you think about him in relationship to race, it is really a glaring brass tack moment in American history coming after the election of the first black president. Here comes Donald Trump. And he makes a very concrete appeal to racial identity in the country. So there are lots of people who feel, you know what, finally someone is standing up and speaking out for me, what Donald Trump calls the forgotten man, typically working class white Americans. And then you have on the other side a Democratic Party that is identifying increasingly with not only blacks, but Latinos, educated women, the younger generation. So you have this incredible moment when we thought we were making progress on race relations. We had reached an epoch where you could elect a black president for the first time. And then you find out, hey, wait a second, look at these polls. Right now, two-thirds of Americans think race relations are worse than ever. Oh, my God, almost half of Americans think the current president is a racist. Such a strong word, and they say yes to posters about this. And people disapprove overwhelmingly of Trump's handling of race. So I thought, wait a minute, this president during the campaign asked a question, a very direct question. What the hell do you have to lose? And people said he was speaking to the black community because he didn't go to a black community to deliver the message. He spoke in sort of a suburban, exurban area outside of Dimmondale, Michigan. And I realized he wasn't talking to the black community. I think he was talking to whites about blacks and doing so in a very derogatory manner. So I thought, there's a need to answer this question. What do you have to lose? I think I know, so let me write a book about it.
Now, I'm sure he would argue, oh, no, I was talking to the black community, and he accuses, you know, the Democratic Party of letting the black community down. So he would say, no, you know, you're wrong. I'm not a racist. And this is, I want to help everyone. And I especially want to help these forgotten communities.
Correct. So here's the thing. Even when he says the most awful things, when he says that somebody like Maxine Waters, the congresswoman, a black congresswoman from California, who's a big Trump critic to the point of calling for impeachment and all the rest, he says she has extraordinarily low IQ. He says LeBron James, so stupid he makes Don Lemon, who Trump previously called the dumbest man on television, he makes Don Lemon look smart. Or he says about Frederica Wilson, a congresswoman from Florida who was defending the widow of a slain soldier, oh, she's a wacky liar. Of course, she's proven to have spoken the truth. I can go on. But the big one, of course, would be that he said the first black president of the United States wasn't born in the country, was an illegitimate president, the so-called birther movement. And, you know, he had success to the point where half of his voters said Obama was not born in the United States. So these are all things that are extremely racially polarizing. I don't think there's any question about it. But if you put that aside, whenever it's raised that, hey, Mr. Trump, there's a, you know, Americans don't feel good about the way race relations are going. He says, look at the unemployment rate. The unemployment rate for blacks is historically low.
African-American unemployment has reached its lowest rate ever recorded in the history of our country. And African-American poverty has reached its lowest rate ever recorded.
And of course, he doesn't mention that most of that, 90% plus of it, was done under President Obama. He has continued to lower it by about one percentage point, now down to 6%. So when he says, oh, this isn't racist, you know, I use bullying type language with lots of antagonists. I engage in lots of talk, but a rising economy lifts all boats, black, white, Asian, Latino, don't worry about it. I think you have to understand that there are substantive policies, and that's what I talk about in the book. Let's get beyond the rhetoric. Substantive policies where this president is doing damage to the black community. So when he asks, what the hell do you have to lose? This book says, here, Mr. President, take a look. I'll show you what you're doing that's costing black America today.
Give us a few examples of exactly what they have to lose.
I would begin with voting rights, because as we approach the midterms, that's such a critical area. As you know, right after the 2016 election, the president created a voter fraud commission on the idea that he should not have lost the popular vote in 2016 by 3 million votes to Hillary Clinton. He said he would not have lost the popular vote if not for illegal immigrants and people in the minority community voting illegally, fraudulently. So the commission looked for any evidence of voter fraud, high and low, near and far, could find nothing. Eventually, it was disbanded. But what has not been disbanded is that Republican majority state legislatures have continued closing polling places, limiting hours for voting, raising the requirements for voter identification in such an effort that people say this amounts to voter suppression, that these folks, the suspicion is, Republicans regard them as people who were going to vote for the Democrats. So why are we doing outreach to this community? So again, that's damaging in terms of a tremendous legacy of efforts that were made in order for blacks to gain the right to vote and exercise that franchise. Similarly, if you wanted to talk about something like, you know, this moment in American history, the Black Lives Matter movement, protest against police brutality and the like, we know that Trump has been very derisive in his commentary about the NFL players, calling them SOBs who should be fired and the like. But again, go to the substance. The substance is that where there are consent decrees between police departments and local communities to try to diffuse some of these tensions, you see that, in fact, oh my gosh, the Attorney General and the Justice Department have pulled back and said, we're not engaging in any of these consent decrees. We don't want to put our stamp on them. We don't encourage them. And the president has sent additional military equipment to the police departments and said, don't be so nice to those bad guys. Again, this is inflammatory behavior when instead you would hope that the leader would be trying to calm the waters again on a point of racial division.
When it comes to, you know, race relations, I mean, that the president keeps trying to make the case that he, you know, he wants to help everybody. Had a big lunch meeting with Kanye West, kind of a spectacle. And Kanye has taken a lot of heat for his support of the president. And he'll make arguments like, for instance, with police brutality. He made a comment during the White House meeting in the Oval Office, you know, black people were killing each other. And yes, there's been police brutality as well, but we're killing each other. And he's, you know, he seems to be embracing, you know, a lot of the president's arguments on these things. I mean, that's a real high-profile supporter. That's someone who maybe brings other people along with him, but he certainly gets trolled a lot on social media for supporting the president.
Well, I think this is another example. This is something I talk about in What the Hell Do You Have to Lose? And I have a chapter about the loss of black voice. If you look around, there are just so well, it's not, I was going to say so few, but there's just no one there who has the policy or political experience in dealing with racial issues and minority issues. So there's no Colin Powell who said this guy's a disaster. There's no Condi Rice. There's no Tom Sowell, all the black intellectuals on the conservative side. That's absent. So when the president says, oh, you know, I'm bringing in Kanye West, he has a relationship maybe with Kanye West because I think Kanye said, oh, guess what? President Trump said he'd see me. President Obama refused to see me because Kanye West had grabbed the mic and insulted Taylor Swift at some event. And President Obama said he was a jerk. But for President Trump, he gloms on to Kanye as a black person with some celebrity who is willing to say he supports me. But when you ask Kanye why, it's because Trump is willing to meet with him. But again, when it comes to substance, there is no, it's just that there's some kind of, he likes to pick celebrities or rich people and say, oh, I have a black friend. But when it comes to actual criminal justice reform, guess what? Republicans before Trump were working with the Obama Justice Department at criminal justice reform to try to lower the number of people in jail for nonviolent drug offenses. That's gone away with the Trump administration. So we come back again to substance. Let's get away from all the kind of static or celebrity faces. Let's say substantively, what is the difference of having Trump in the White House than anybody else, not to mention a Democrat? And I think there's a big difference. And that's why we have something very specific to lose in terms of voting rights, in terms of criminal justice reform, in terms of education initiatives, the fight against affirmative action, lowering the effort to try to improve opportunities for minority children in highly segregated schools to get out of those schools and maybe go into neighborhoods with better schools. All of this taking place currently under the Trump administration. I think that's why you see the numbers are so overwhelming and people saying, boy, I never thought we'd be here in 2018, but it seems like race relations are getting worse.
I should mention he does have a prison reform task force and effort underway. But there is one other thing that I'll mention that Kanye West said because it's a broader statement.
On this podcast,
I will not
no
curse.
No cursing because I use foul language.
No cursing allowed. But he did make a statement about us being one country. He sort of made an appeal for unity.
Right.
And he said, we can't be red and blue. It sounds like gangs all over again. Could that appeal go anywhere? Is that what both parties should be focusing on more somehow, trying to bring the country together? Have we gone past the point of that being a possibility?
Well, I'm an optimist, so I would hope not. And I think that appeals to our better angels are always well served because I think Americans are an optimistic people. As Reagan said, you know, we're a morning in America people. I mean, we believe in that. But I think with this president, what we see time and again are two faces, that he'll say something like that. But then he's also the guy who, after Charlottesville, said, find people who are on both sides, even when you have white nationalists and neo-Nazis marching in the street and a woman being killed. I mean, this is what contributes to this perception that race relations are getting worse. And it's not morning in America, but in fact, it looks like it's getting pretty dark. So, and, you know, when you stop and think about the very idea, this goes back to the start of our conversation. What the hell do you have to lose? You understand he is focused on the 20% of blacks who remain in poverty. And that group is disproportionately young people, children, oftentimes linked to the high number of single parent families and the like. Kind of sticks his finger in the eyes of people who have been historically disadvantaged and said, hey, you're a burden on us. You're parasites on the great American dream. And I think, nope. I think there are people who have been discouraged, discriminated against, but who nonetheless want the American dream. And I wish the president would tap into that kind of optimistic, aspiring essence that I think is dominant in the black, Latino, and Asian communities, as well as the white community.
Juan Williams, there's so much more in your new book, What the Hell Do You Have to Lose? Trump's War on Civil Rights. A lot of history in the book as well. And co-host of The Five also. Thank you so much for joining us.
What a pleasure, because it's a very tricky topic, and I appreciate the fact that you gave me this time.
This is Diamond.
And I'm Silk.
With your Fox News commentary
coming right up.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping to weave in a bunch of Shake It Off or stronger lyrics to transition to the week of celebrity political news, but sadly I'm better at explaining cloture votes than I am pop culture. But by now I am sure you've seen the footage of Kanye West's high-profile Oval Office visit.
What I need Saturday Night Live to improve on, or what I need the liberals to improve on, is if he don't look good, we don't look good. This is our president!
And read about Taylor Swift making rare endorsements in Tennessee. But if you're like me, you may be asking, does any of this have any political impact? Our national correspondent, Tanya J. Powers, has been covering just that, and she helped increase my pop culture IQ.
All right, so Tanya, let's start, I guess, with the, this isn't the first feud between Taylor Swift and Kanye West,
well,
from what I understand.
It's funny you should mention that. There was a little kerfuffle back in 2009.
Yo, Taylor, I'm really happy for you. I'm going to let you finish. But Beyonce had one of the best videos of all time.
That came from the VMAs in 2009. So that is kind of where the bad blood, so to speak, started. Instant street cred for you right there, Jared.
One of us is the parent of teenagers and one of us is not.
And you tell which one?
But let's talk about this because now both of, Kanye has been in this political world for a while now. He has obviously been a big advocate of President Trump. This was a new sort of play by Taylor Swift, right? She has sort of famously avoided any political endorsement.
Oh, yes. She has on purpose stayed out of this. It's not because she hasn't been asked or anything like that, but she never would give an answer. She never has waded into the political waters. And then all of a sudden, over the weekend, we saw the Instagram post that was kind of lengthy, and she outlined her beliefs, and she encouraged voters to register, and she endorsed Democrats in both Tennessee's Senate and House of Representatives races, and she lives in Tennessee, so that makes sense. And as a result, not only did it tell a lot of people, okay, well, this is how she thinks politically, it also had the, you could call it added bonus of making voter registration a very hot topic. And it just so happens that she did this right before a lot of deadlines for voter registration came up. I know on Tuesday there was a lot of states that had voter registration deadlines that you had to be registered by Tuesday in several states. So, and there's a lot of deadlines between now and Election Day, quite frankly, because some states you can just walk up on Election Day and vote. But it had a giant effect. 36 hours after her post, Tennessee itself saw an increase in registered voters, specifically about 2,100 registrations in the 36 hours since her post. That was out of 5,183 that the state had seen so far this whole month as of that point. So to say that people aren't paying attention would be wrong, because she got a lot of Instagram and Twitter followers, and they saw this and went, we should probably register. A lot of them did.
Obviously, the test will be if anybody votes, because we've seen that, obviously, especially with the demographic. We're talking about younger voters who I suppose are the ones that would be most interested in Taylor Swift's thoughts on politics.
Right.
And listen, that's an important demographic. Certainly, Democrats are trying to court the youth vote and have for a long time. From a political standpoint, and sort of what I've seen here in Washington is now you have Taylor Swift and Kanye West taking an awful lot of criticism, now praise as well, but really opening themselves up to criticism. And at the end of the day, these are artists who make their livelihood on fans buying their music.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a risk involved in when these artists sort of very forwardly come out and express a political view?
Yeah, I think there is, honestly. I mean, it's not just artists. I mean, look at what happened when, Colin Kaepernick decided to kneel. I mean, it's sports figures, it's musical artists, it's whoever. But, if you've had people who probably weren't big Kanye fans this week decide, he's not so bad after all, and really gave him a second look after his visit to the Oval Office. And he and President Trump covered a number of topics. And, They talked about everything from mental health to hydrogen planes to endorsement deals, politics, social issues. And regardless of whatever you think about Kanye West and his politics or his MAGA hat or anything else, you have to remember that this is the guy married to Kim Kardashian. Kim Kardashian is the one who managed to get someone pardoned. So it can't be understated. And you know this being in Washington as well, the effect that celebrity has on President Trump and the way he sees things. He likes to talk to celebrities. He likes to talk about who he knows that's a celebrity, that kind of stuff. And as a matter of fact, I was reading some reporting on this that her being able to get that woman basically set free from prison actually has changed the way a lot of people who are seeking pardons, how they do that. Because now there's this push to, wait a minute, he'll talk to famous people. Maybe I can get my message through and ask for a pardon if I know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody, maybe, and they can contact a famous person and maybe they'll listen to them. So it's actually
changed
that.
And there are some policy implications because
yes.
Congress is working in a bipartisan fashion and is sort of trying to work with the White House as well, at least members of the administration as well, on justice reform, particularly when it comes to sentencing guidelines for nonviolent drug offenses. And so it's easy to sort of make light, I think, of these on-camera settings. Right. And certainly there was a wide-ranging conversation with Kanye West. But I think there are people that view this as an opportunity to at least get an issue front and center, even if it takes, an unconventional kind of approach to do that. I mean, there were a lot of eyeballs on Kanye West and President Trump.
Yeah. When the game changes, you've pretty much got to learn how to play the new game. Either that or just not at all. And that's kind of what people have figured out. Going back to what you were saying about the younger voters, I think a lot of people misunderstand the people who are just turning 18 and who have just turned 18 since the 2016 elections. We're talking about Gen Z. And I've actually done a lot of reading and some research and interviewing people on Gen Z. And to understand that group of people, you have to understand these are not, they don't function like millennials. They definitely don't function like, Gen Xers at all. They are usually the children of the Gen Xers, and they are more activists thought. They have that kind of line of thinking. They have the line of thinking of a more of a world view. Now, these are the same folks around Snapchat. However, that's how they're getting their news. These are very informed young people. I have two of them in my house, so I can tell you from firsthand knowledge. They're also the ones who, look at the politics of what's going on, and they see things, and they actually know more about what's going on in the world around them than either one of us probably did at their age. So I think that it's important not to, kind of cast that aside and go, well, they're younger voters. They'll probably register, but that's probably about it. I don't know that that's going to be the case on either side, Democrat, Republican, either one.
It has certainly made me think about things I did not think I would be thinking about or talking about as a Washington correspondent that I am. Glad, Tanya, to have you around to share your expertise and the expertise of your children,
Jared,
as well.
I'm going to let you finish, but no, I'm just kidding. It's been fun.
Tanya, thanks so much.
Anytime.
It's the new Jerry Willis podcast.
I love giving you an edge with your money. I like to break it all down so that you wind up with more money in your pocket, more confidence in your future.
Find it now on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Fox News Radio.
Here's a look at the week ahead.
Tuesday.
Tip-off for the 2018-2019 NBA season. Teams playing games on back-to-back days is at an all-time low.
Wednesday.
Recreational marijuana use in Canada becomes legal. Roughly 100 dispensaries across the country are expected to be open. Also Wednesday, British Prime Minister Theresa May joins EU leaders in Brussels to discuss Brexit. Officials hope to agree on a final withdrawal treaty with Britain.
Friday.
Bernie Sanders will be back on the political trail. The Vermont senator kicks off a 9-state tour to campaign for Democratic candidates in the midterm elections. Sanders ran for president in 2016 and is considered a possible contender in 2020. I'm Rich Dennison, and that's a look at the week ahead.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Diamond and Silk.
What's on your mind?
Well, so
look, you know, we have the movie Democrats. Yes, how you feeling about it, girl?
My sister is feeling good.
We're feeling fine,
like fine wine, only get better with time.
I love it. So you all know that the President Trump is draining the swamp.
Uh-huh.
And what we are doing is exposing the swamp and exposing the hypocrisy.
That's exactly what we're doing.
I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
So if you go to DemocratsTheMovie.com,
uh-huh,
you can get your tickets right there.
Yes.
And it's playing in theaters nationwide.
That's right.
And I'm so excited about it because it's time to expose the hypocrisy.
It certainly is. Basically what we're doing, Diamond, we're going to be giving people the truth with proof.
I love it.
That's exactly what we're going to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be giving them the facts, Jack.
What?
And we ain't holding nothing back.
Absolutely
nothing.
That's
exactly what's going on.
That's what's going on.
We're giving it to you straight from the gate.
I love it, Silk.
Uh-huh.
And we want everybody to go see it. You know, with everything that's going on in our country today,
uh-huh,
I think it's time to sit back, relax, and let's laugh a little bit.
Yeah.
We have to have a little laughter. I heard laughter is good for the soul.
That's right.
I want my soul to feel good.
Yes.
So I need to laugh a little bit. And I want you all to laugh a little bit.
Yeah.
So I want you to go to DemocratsTheMovie.com.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Click on the link, get tickets. And you can put in your zip code or put in your city,
mm-hmm,
to see where it's playing at. Hopefully a theater near you.
That's right.
And we want to see your face in the place. We're so excited about it.
It's very exciting. And you know, the good thing about this particular movie that we want people to really, really understand is that it's educational.
Right.
You know, a lot of people have been asleep to everything that's been going on around them.
Absolutely.
And now with Diamond and Silk, what we are doing is showing you exactly what's going on in these Democrat-run cities.
Absolutely.
People need to know what's going
on.
They
need to know what's going on. You have some walking around here, running around here, talking about we have to impeach 45.
Impeach 45.
Uh-huh. But when we look into their district, when
yes,
we go to their district,
uh-huh,
and we see how run down it is,
uh-huh,
okay,
yeah,
wait a minute, hold up.
Hold
something
up.
Ain't right. Maybe it's time for us to impeach you.
That's
and listen,
right.
I let me just go ahead on and say this. Let's get off my chest.
Get it off your chest.
I think it is important and imperative for everyone to go to the polls.
Yes.
You have to go to the polls in these midterm elections. Listen, you're going to have to vote right so you won't get left.
That's
you're
right.
You're going to have to vote right, vote red, vote Republican.
Mm-hmm.
We want to see your face at the polls, baby.
That's right.
Because with everything that's going on in our country,
yes,
listen, these people are resisting because they don't want America to exist as we know it.
That's right.
Okay? And we can't let them get the upper hand, so it's time to stand. And listen, we have the right to criticize Congress.
Yes, we
they
do.
Work for us.
Mm-hmm.
We don't work for them.
That's right.
We paid them our tax dollars.
That's right.
Am I correct?
You're correct. And so technically, we they bought.
That's right. And we get to fire you when we get good and ready to.
Uh-huh.
And if you're not doing your job, a lot of you are going to be fired.
That's
so
right.
I want you to go to the movie, DummyCrestTheMovie.com. That's DummyCrestTheMovie.com. Get your tickets. We want to see your face in the place. Okay, and you know what, you all, I love you all so much.
We
thank you all
you
for your love and support. And we was just coming to give y'all the 2-1-1. We call it the 2-1-1 because it's two of us,
and we're the ones giving it to you.
So in the meantime and in between time, we will see you next time.
You have been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to Fox News Radio's hourly newscast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, visit foxnews.com.